Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Jackie Leonard, and at 19:30 GMT on Tuesday, the 4th of April, we're doing things a little differently.
Hello, I'm James Reynolds, and in this special edition of the Global News Podcast, we are reporting from New York as Donald Trump pleads not guilty to criminal charges.
34 felony counts, including falsifying business records, and as James says, not guilty pleas have been entered. Security was stepped up around the Manhattan court for the arrival of Donald Trump, who becomes the first former or sitting US president to face such charges. In other news, we look at the significance of Finland becoming the 31st member of NATO and a fiery final AGM at Credit Suisse as the chairman apologises to furious shareholders. A courthouse today, situated at 100 Center Street in Lower Manhattan in New York, became the center of attention for US and global media. It was there that Donald Trump arrived and was put into police custody. It's the first time in American history that a former US president has faced a judge on criminal charges. He denies any wrongdoing and claims he's a victim of a witch hunt. The charges against him, 34 felony counts, including falsifying business records. They are said to be related to the payment of $130,000 in hush money to the porn star Stormy Daniels in the closing weeks of the 2016 presidential campaign. Our North America editor Sarah Smith watched the arrival of Donald Trump at the courthouse.
Well, there was a great deal of excitement here as that convoy of about 15 cars bringing Donald Trump down through Manhattan to the lower criminal court arrived. He got out of the car and defiantly waved to some of his supporters as he went into the courtroom. You would think he was arriving at a campaign visit, but in fact, as soon as he entered that building, he was officially under arrest. He'll be being processed inside there now, fingerprinted, and crucially being told what all the charges against him are. He doesn't have any of those details yet. We will see him appear in the courtroom where he will be asked by the judge to enter a plea to all of those charges he's just been informed have been laid against him. We expect he'll plead not guilty, but those scenes when we get them will be quite something to look at. Another historic moment in Trump's journey towards this criminal trial.
Security both inside and around the court was heavy. There are reports that 35,000 New York police have been put on standby. My colleague James Reynolds was stationed outside the courthouse and I asked him to describe the scene.
Among supporters and opponents, there's been a pretty boisterous mood. For large hours in the morning, it was quite quiet. Then as the court cases neared, the mood has got a bit more agitated among some, partly, Jackie, this is because of the fact that in this small park opposite the courthouse, there is entranceways in which Trump supporters and Trump opponents accidentally, inadvertently have, I wouldn't say mingled, but come into contact in the same area, and that's generated a number of arguments. But right around me now, things are quite quiet. The three people in the rickshaw in favour of Donald Trump continue to chant about 30 metres away from us. Someone's put a banner on the back of the rickshaw, Ultra Extreme MAGA, the Trump movement. There's also, just fascinatingly, another group of people which look like they're a film crew. They look like they're filming a scene from a drama. There's a man in a suit arguing with a woman in a suit. It might be that they've decided this Trump courtroom battle is not a bad place to have as a backdrop for the drama that they are filming. But a little earlier, I did get into the pro-Trump enclosure when it was a bit quieter, and I spoke to some Trump supporters, including Jamie and Nicole. They're from rural Pennsylvania.
I feel like this is an injustice that is politically motivated, that if he wasn't running for president right now, this wouldn't be happening. There's lots of other crime that could be investigated, and that this is only happening because he's running for president.
Where have you come from today?
Pennsylvania.
So that's a pretty long journey.
3 hours.
You felt that strongly to come here, to be here from the morning?
I could take off. We could find someone to watch our kids for us. And then number two, yeah, we feel that strongly that we wanted to be here. I was not expecting the circus, but then again, what do I know?
And the circus being the media.
There's more press here than there's people.
More press than people.
Yeah.
And can I ask how old your kids are?
26 down to 3. We have 15.
What do you tell them about what you're doing here today and what kind of conversations do you have with them the older ones, perhaps.
We're exercising our First Amendment right, and we're gathering and peacefully protesting something that we feel is wrong. And they know where we sit in history right now. They know the founding of this country. And so they understand why we're here and why we have to do this.
We have two serving.
Yeah, we have two in the military.
One in the Army, one in the Air Force. So it's the least we could do.
How much is politics part of your lives?
Well, it wasn't a big deal until 2020. After 2020, it's become a more important part of our life. But number one, we're Christian. Number two, we're parents. And number three, we're into politics.
Like, we've never been to a Trump rally. We've never been to one because we were out door knocking or we had something with the children to do. I saw the last time they were here when Trump was about to be indicted and brought in.
Yeah, about a couple of weeks ago.
There weren't a lot of supporters here. And that's sad because there should be people here. There should be. Because the sentiment out where we live, everybody, it's Trump.
And James, you have been talking to anti-Trump protesters as well, haven't you?
We have. My colleagues and I have been going around trying to make sure that we bring everybody a reasonably accurate, editorially balanced view of opinions here in New York, bearing, of course, in mind that New York itself, the city, voted overwhelmingly against Donald Trump in the 2016 and 2020 presidential elections. But we did speak to a number of anti-Trump people as they would describe themselves. Let's listen.
Donald Trump is a joke, right? He's a very dangerous joke. He's been making fun of everybody. He loves the circus. But today's a very serious day in our country. It's a historic day. We're finally, somebody with so much power, the ex-president, is going to be arrested and hopefully held accountable.
I'm here because Trump needs to be held accountable for one of the many crimes he's committed. And I'm here in support of democracy because I think he's a threat to it.
As New Yorkers, it feels so good that we're the first place that holds him accountable. Finally, even if it doesn't seem like it's the biggest one, you know, covering up affairs and things like that, he did it in a criminal way and he did it in a political way.
We're just here for entertainment, honestly, and see the different sides, see if it's going to be peaceful, violent. Everyone we've met is so nice right now. There's no indication that anyone wants to be violent. They're just kind of wanting to be heard. He definitely is a criminal and should be locked up, so yeah. We're ready for justice to be served.
The views of those who oppose Donald Trump, and important for me to say that those views were gathered by members of the BBC, by partner broadcasters as well, and then edited and brought and put on this program as well. And in addition, Jackie is giving you that editorially balanced indication of views around here. I just want to pause and say that here in New York, it is 17 minutes past two. If the criminal justice system is on time, Donald Trump will now be making his appearance inside a courtroom on the 15th floor. From what we understand, all other events on that floor have been cleared. We expect the court case, if it goes ahead now, if it's going ahead, there are no pictures from inside, to last around 20, 30 minutes as charges are read. These current moments are a moment in American history. This has never happened before.
James Reynolds. Well, Yalda Hakim spoke to Thomas Gift, director of the Centre for US Politics at University College London. So is this a new chapter in US history?
We've never seen anything like this before, and that's why it's so difficult to predict what is going to happen next. It is unprecedented, and by nature of the fact that it's unprecedented, we can't know what is going to happen going forward. But you know, whether you are for the prosecution of Donald Trump or against the prosecution of Donald Trump, I think you do have to say that it's a sad day in the United States to see a former president and the most likely, I think, nominee for the Republican side in 2024 facing criminal charges. It's just not a good look for the United States. I think it's tarnishing to its reputation abroad. You know, of course, you could say that it's entirely justified and that this needed to happen. But just the fact that it is happening, I think, you know, it is somewhat worrisome.
And the other point I think you've just made there is that he is the front runner here at this stage.
I don't think that there's any doubt that Donald Trump right now is the prohibitive favorite to obtain the Republican nomination. That certainly doesn't mean that he will get it. But if you just look at the polls, I think you have to say that Donald Trump is the favorite. And I actually think that a lot of the polls may, in fact, underestimate Donald Trump's support, because so many of the polls that we look at are just one-on-one matchups. For example, Donald Trump versus Ron DeSantis or Donald Trump versus Nikki Haley. In those scenarios, it looks like some of the opponents may have a chance to dethrone Trump. But we have to keep in mind that it's not just Donald Trump versus a particular candidate. It's really Donald Trump versus all of the other candidates. And if Donald Trump is able to maintain his floor of support in the Republican Party, which is about 30 to 40% of the electorate, if the other candidates split the anti-Trump vote, that really will allow, I think, Donald Trump to kind of clear the table in some of these early primary states, become the front runner. And then after that, it could just become sort of a rubber stamp. Again, a lot could happen between now and the primaries. It's too early to speculate. But if you just look at the numbers right now, I think it's hard to say anyone has a better shot at Donald Trump.
So what perils might Mr. Trump now face? Here's our analysis editor, Ros Atkins.
Well, depending on the charges, a fine is by far the most likely outcome, though jail is possible if, we should emphasise, unlikely. And as I tell you all of this, you might be thinking, can Trump still run for president? Well, the answer to that is yes, because being charged doesn't change that, nor would being convicted. Though, of course, both scenarios may impact his campaign. And Donald Trump's facing other investigations too. The FBI continues to investigate his handling of classified documents, some of which were retrieved from his offices in Florida. There's a Justice Department investigation into efforts to overturn the 2020 election, including the Capitol riots, though it's not clear if Mr. Trump is a focus here. And then there's also what's happening in Georgia. There's a criminal investigation into whether Donald Trump interfered in the 2020 election result there. So today is, of course, a moment of legal and political jeopardy for Donald Trump, but there may be more of those to come.
That was Ros Atkins. Well, the court hearing has been making news around the world. Our China media analyst, Carrie Allen, has been looking at the Chinese coverage.
There has been a lot of it because Chinese media are fascinated with Trump and US politics in general. So it very much is round-the-clock coverage. Today there are live streams in Washington and a lot of attention and a lot of expectation to see what might happen, because you've got newspapers that are suggesting that there could be riots. Already people have been seeing protests on the street, and you do get some very inflammatory language suggesting that this could spill over into an incident like that Capitol Hill in 2021. I've even seen the word civil war be used.
And is social media interested?
Social media is very interested. Long term, there have been nicknames for Trump, like Comrade Trump and Chuan Jianguo, which is, it basically means Trump builds China, because there is a perception that because he's so unpredictable, it could be beneficial to China. So you have got a lot of very positive, jokey nicknames for him. And looking at how users are commenting on Weibo, which is China's equivalent of a platform like Facebook or Twitter, you've got people saying this is showtime. There's a real feeling that this is entertainment viewing, even though it's news, which can sometimes be quite drab and dull. They feel that this is really exciting and something they want to be keeping across.
So tell us a little bit more about the tone of the coverage and what people are saying and the perception of Mr. Trump in Chinese media, what he represents.
The big focus really is that Trump has exacerbated tears in American society. So whenever there's mention of Trump in state media, there's a real message that he is, to a lot of people, still their leader in America. There's a real feeling that with him back in the news, there's more and more division in US society. As for Trump himself, there are people online who talk about how they dislike him full stop because they think that he made a lot of damaging choices. But at the same time, they often see media on him through the lens of Chinese state media, which very much says that if Trump was back in power, this would be beneficial for China, because that there's a feeling that China's political leadership is more intelligent than Trump. So a real kind of feeling of love and hate when it comes to Trump.
There is interest, isn't there, about the phrase of him turning himself in or surrendering to face the court, isn't there?
There is, yes, because a lot of media leading up to now is really focused on him being this very powerful figure. And now they're starting to see images of him with his head bent, surrounded by security forces. So there are people in China who feel that they might see a different Trump now. They might see a more muted Trump, and that might change perceptions as well. Because yes, they've enjoyed seeing him be this outspoken figure, and they're wondering whether they might see a different Trump that they've just not seen for years.
Carrie Allen. Still to come, fury and a pocket full of walnuts as the chairman of Credit Suisse apologises to shareholders 16 days after the bank was taken over in a hasty deal with its larger rival, UBS. Now the other big stories of the day. As we heard in the last edition, NATO has officially confirmed Finland as its 31st member during a ceremony at the alliance's headquarters in Brussels. The application to join the bloc was made last year after the Russian invasion of Ukraine. As Finland's flag was raised in Brussels, a band played the national anthem. The NATO Secretary-General Jens Stoltenberg said it was an historic moment and the extension of an existing relationship. The Kremlin, though, says Finland's accession to NATO will force Russia to take what it called countermeasures. Our Eastern Europe correspondent, Sarah Rainsford, who spent many years reporting from Moscow, considers the significance of this latest NATO expansion for Russia.
When Vladimir Putin ordered the all-out invasion of Ukraine, he gave all sorts of pretexts, including the claim that NATO is expanding its presence there, making it an imminent security risk, even an existential threat for Russia. But as a direct result of that war, NATO has grown and grown stronger. Russia's border with Finland is more than 800 miles long. In that sense, Mr. Putin's gambit has failed badly, leaving the Kremlin to utter dark warnings about countermeasures without clarifying what they might be. A spokesman said Russia would keep a close eye on how NATO uses Finnish territory, then decide whether that constitutes a threat. The defence minister called it another anti-Russian move. And that's how Moscow is handling this. Domestically, it's more fodder for politicians and propagandists there who insist that the West is out to get Russia, to surround and weaken it. Those who falsely present the war here in Ukraine as Russia, the victim, fighting back. Inside Russia, it's also useful new fuel for all the talk of enemies abroad. That justifies tighter control and more repression, protecting Vladimir Putin in the Kremlin. Still, for Moscow, Finland joining NATO is different than having Ukraine in the alliance, because Mr. Putin believes he has the right to veto Kyiv's membership, just like he believes Ukraine, as a nation, has no right to exist.
Sarah Rainsford. Investigators in Russia have formally charged a woman being held in connection with the killing of a prominent pro-war blogger in St. Petersburg. Vladlen Tatarsky died in an explosion on Sunday in a cafe where he was due to speak. 40 people were injured in the blast. Daria Trepova, who's 26, has been accused of carrying out a terrorist act resulting in death, a charge that carries a maximum penalty of 20 years in prison. 16 days after a hastily arranged deal saw the troubled Credit Suisse bank taken over by its larger rival, the chairman of Credit Suisse has apologised to shareholders. Axel Lehmann was speaking in Zurich at the final annual general meeting of the bank, and our correspondent Imogen Folks says the mood was fiery.
We had far more shareholders turn up than usually do, and some of them were just kind of ordinary, often late middle-aged Swiss people who thought they'd put a bit of money into what they thought was safe, i.e. a big Swiss bank. And their fury is the one word to describe it. One man got up, he said, "I'm wearing a red tie because it's to symbolise the red card that you lot deserve," and he pointed at the management. Another accused Credit Suisse management of greed and incompetence. Another, and this was perhaps the theatrical highlight of the day, came up and emptied his pockets of a handful of walnuts and said, "These are worth more than my shares today." So that's the kind of feeling you got. And Credit Suisse management, they apologised over and over again, but the criticism just kept on coming.
Yes, the chairman did say he was sorry. Tell us a little bit more about how he handled the anger, the emotion of the people in the room.
I think they knew they just had to take it. They had to pretty much get up there and eat humble pie. They're both the CEO, Ulrich Körner, and the chairman of the board, Axel Lehmann. They both said, we're sorry, we're sorry. They did make the point it was either go bankrupt with catastrophic consequences, not just for Switzerland's economy, but for the global financial system, or this deal. So we had no choice in the end. But of course, in the shareholders' eyes, that doesn't excuse them from the mistakes that have been made over a longer period at Credit Suisse. The bank lost $7.9 billion last year. So, you know, there were weaknesses in Credit Suisse which allowed this to happen and which had been building up for a long time. And I think they know that. They will be in post for a few more months, basically, to smooth this merger with UBS. And then that is it. And that will be the high point or low point, in fact, of their CVs, not giants of the global banking world, but the men, and they are men, who brought a 167-year-old bank, a bank systemic to the global economy, to the end of the road.
Imogen Folks. Now back to our main story. Donald Trump turned himself in to a New York court today, where he became the first former US president to face criminal charges. He has pleaded not guilty to 34 felony charges of falsifying business records. The charges follow an investigation by the Manhattan District Attorney's Office into a payment made to buy the silence of a porn star, Stormy Daniels, shortly before Mr. Trump's election victory in 2016. James Reynolds in New York spoke to us just after the charges were released.
The arraignment is taking place. It may be in its final minutes, and we know that from the pictures, the still pictures that have come out from the courtroom. That one picture that you described a few minutes ago is worth pausing on. It shows Mr. Trump in the center of a row of five, two lawyers on either side, including Joe Dacopina to his left. Mr. Trump sits, from what we can tell, without any papers in front of him, looking to his left, perhaps towards the still photographer. What's fascinating about this picture is this. There are two police officers, one man, one woman with a face mask on, standing behind him. You can see on one of the officers' handcuffs on the right part of her belt. Those handcuffs have not been used. They were not used to escort Mr. Trump into the courtroom. He walked in without restraint. He has entered that plea of not guilty. The charges have been unsealed. The indictment is now known, and that really begins to bring to an end this part of the judicial process. In a few minutes' time, then, we would expect him to walk through the corridor. There may even be more fit pictures of that. And then to head out with his Secret Service entourage out of this courtroom, along some of the streets around me, and then eventually towards the airport, which will take him to Florida, where he will address his supporters. 34 charges is a lot. It means that Mr. Trump will have to put up probably a significant defense. It may be that he will seek to change the location of the trial. It may be that he will seek various measures which might delay the length of the trial. We don't know how long it would last. Similar cases in the past have lasted 12, 15, 17 months. If you add April 2023, 12, 15, 17 months onto that, you get the height of the presidential campaign next year.
And given what has been going on, what has been your impression of this historic moment? We keep saying historic, but it really is, isn't it?
America was founded in 1776. 45 men, and they've all been men, have served as president. 36 made it to be a former president. None, until a few minutes ago, had ever sat in a courtroom as a defendant. Other countries will find that this has happened wherever they may be, that people have had ex-presidents judged or tried. Britain once did it to a king in the 1600s. But nevertheless, this is a step that America had not taken until now. Supporters of Donald Trump feel they have a strong defense that he might win this case. But there's something else to suggest. This is not just the first time that Mr. Trump has been indicted, a former president. There might be other times as well. There are other cases going ahead against him. One in the state of Georgia, another a serious federal, national investigation into what part he may have played in the attempt to storm Congress in the 6th of January 2021. We may expect to hear more from all those investigations as Mr. Trump's legal issues continue and as the 2024 presidential race continues, with Mr. Trump a defendant, perhaps not just here in New York City, in Lower Manhattan, but elsewhere as well.
And just briefly, you've been there throughout the day with opponents and supporters. Just briefly, what would you say the mood is right now?
The mood looks calm now. I can see people walking away quite slowly. One person on his unicycle or uniscooter has just sped past me.
That was James Reynolds in New York on the day that Donald Trump became the first former US president to face criminal charges. And that's it from us for now. But because things are happening, we will not make you wait too long for the next edition. Charlotte Gallagher will have a quick update a little after 2-ish GMT, and then normal Global News podcast service will be resumed. As ever, our email address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. You can also find us on Twitter at Global News Pod. This edition was mixed by Chris Ablakwa. The producer was Liam McSheffrey. Our editor is Karen Martin. I'm Jackie Leonard, and until next time, goodbye.